Huge news, Wayfair shoppers. There's still time to shop Wayfair's Cyber Week sale. Thought the savings were over? Think again. Cyber Week, aka the holiday home stretch, is on now. Right now, get up to 70% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home, just in time for the holidays. Yep, even the big stuff. Didn't get everything on your Black Friday list? We got you. There's no place like home for the holidays, and no place like Wayfair for Cyber Week savings. Shop Wayfair's Cyber Week right now through December 7th and save up to 70% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Back, everybody, to another episode of The Basement Binge. It's great to be sitting down recording another episode of the podcast. This one in particular about a film that if you've ever listened to an episode of The Basement Binge, you would know I probably have significant interest in, Tron Ares. Tron has been a part of the podcast for a long while, and it's because no other piece of media has had as big of an impact on my life as Tron Legacy has. What do I mean by that? I mean that my love of movies, my love of music, and what types of music I like, specifically my love for Daft Punk, which has been, ever since I saw Tron Legacy, a big part of my life, my love for sci-fi as a genre, my interest in cinematography and directing, which is what caused me to then go to film school, and film school is the reason that you're now listening to this podcast. All of those things started with Tron Legacy. I'm not being hyperbolic with that. I'm being serious. There is no other film that I have seen as many times as Tron Legacy. I used to have a tradition before I had a child to watch it every single year, and I enjoyed it every single year. So you could say that I've been invested in Tron Legacy and have been extremely interested and anxious for a third Tron movie to be released. There were some plans that were on, like, the bonus features of the Tron Legacy Blu-ray, you know, about what the third film could kind of be like. It is not what Tron Ares is, but I've been interested in Tron getting another film for a while. So let's get into the very first segment, 2 cents, where I will literally set a timer for 2 minutes and tell you my thoughts, spoiler-free, about the film and what I thought of it. And I have no notes written down. This is purely just feeling after going to see the film. 2 minutes, here we go. I really liked Tron Ares. I went to go see it in IMAX last night. And after having avoided so much of the film intentionally to have no expectations going in, I was surprised by how much it felt like Tron Legacy. It didn't feel like they forgot what it was coming from. It feels like they really cared about Tron Legacy, if that's what I can say. Like, I was worried that Tron Legacy doesn't have a good rep. No one's raving about Tron Legacy being one of the greatest films ever made. The biggest conversation about Tron Legacy is always Daft Punk. And so all the other things that I personally love about Tron Legacy, production design, cinematography, lighting, obviously not necessarily the score, but the sound design, those types of things, the film Tron Ares continues, and it feels like it respects Tron Legacy. And I don't know how much of that is Joseph Kosinski, who's a producer on this film. This film had a lot of producers, surprisingly. Joseph Kosinski is a producer on the film, so maybe that is part of it. But I also just feel like the cinematography and editing is another one, was actually really, really well done. The story is rather straightforward. It's nothing groundbreaking, but it's a blockbuster film, and it does a good job of being like a popcorn blockbuster film that you can enjoy and have a good time. The music from Nine Inch Nails is remarkable. They have a big shoes to fill coming up with, like, what is one of the most iconic film scores ever made in Daft Punk's Tron Legacy album. And they do a really good job. Like, it feels both reminiscent of Tron Legacy, but also completely new without, like, forgetting the, like, legitimate impact the Tron Legacy score had on the film and kind of, like, the atmosphere of the film. This film, similar to what Daft Punk did, there's a timer, Nine Inch Nails was able to capture a similar atmosphere into the film through their music. Overall, I really, really did like the film, and I'm surprised by how few critiques I have of it. We will get into those in future segments here shortly. So before we bust down the spoiler wall and talk about the film more in depth, let's go into the next segment, Live Up, where I simply talk about my expectations for the film and if it was able to live up to them. And my expectations for the film were that I intentionally tried to avoid expectations as much as possible. I intentionally only watched like the first two trailers that were released, in particular the music. It's going to be mentioned many times, but the Daft Punk Tron Legacy album is so influential to my life and so impactful to the enjoyment of Tron Legacy that I didn't want to have any... I wanted to be 100% surprised by the Nine Inch Nails scores as much as possible. So when the visualizers were released for some of the songs or the music videos or they were doing the singles were released for it, I engaged in none of that. So the film started, and real quickly, after the Disney logo, the Nine Inch Nails score just kicks you in the teeth and gets started and like... starts this where like the thought that I had as I was watching the film, this is literally the thought that entered my mind, is that this score lacks the orchestral feeling that Tron Legacy was able to combine with Daft Punk's sound and makes up for that with aggression. Like the score is synthy and it's electric and loud, and you know, obviously seeing an IMAX makes it loud, but it's like aggressive in the atmosphere, and it matches the character of Ares rather well, and kind of the aggression of the characters and kind of the headspace that they are in, and like the environment that we feel like we're in as you know, this world that we're entering. So like immediately that like doubtful expectation of, oh my gosh, there's no way the music's going to be as good as Tron Legacy, was immediately dismissed as I was reminded there's other people besides Daft Punk who are also talented. And Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross did a great job with the score. I think it's also kind of interesting to use the words of one of the producers for Daft Punk, who he says casted Daft Punk for Tron Legacy, that Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross have worked on film scores many times before as Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. You might know them from the Social Network. But here, it's Nine Inch Nails, and it's because they're cast in the film the same way that Daft Punk was or the same way that Jared Leto is. After the music, which is kind of the largest concern I had about it, there were concerns I had about the story and what story they're going to try and tell, or are they going to try and do too much. And while some people might be upset that it doesn't do more with the topics of like a program or AI entering our world, I think that it appropriately avoids those topics, not like in an afraid way, but then it's just like, that's not the story we're interested in telling. We're telling a different type of story. We don't want our story to be focused on a program and AI and all of those types of things that are scary and challenging to talk about and like frustrating and complex. And instead, we're going to talk about humanity, and we're going to talk about like what makes life good, which is complex and frustrating and challenging to talk about, but in a different way. Like if my daughter's laughing at me. It follows the same pattern of other films where like an alien or an AI, you know, enters our world and wants to live, and they want to understand humans and what it means to be humans and means to live and that type of thing. After my concerns were relieved, both in aspect to the story and to the music, the other one that I had is just kind of the look of the film, both the production design and the set design and the CGI and the visual effects and the cinematography in particular. I think in so many ways, Tron Legacy is a masterclass in digital cinematography. I think Claudio Miranda is someone who I really respect and admire for multiple reasons, but that film is so great in its cinematography and its use of lining, its use of blocking, just and how all those things convert digitally, which so much of that comes from Claudio Miranda, but that also comes from his good collaboration with the visual effects supervisor and also the visual effects artist. Like there's a lot of synergy and collaboration that has to happen there. Anyway, so I really admire Tron Legacy for that, and was worried that Tron Ares would be much lazier. And what I can say is that it is not lazier at all, which is like one of the best things to hear ever. Jeff Cronenworth or Cronenweth, Cronen, how the heck do you say his last name? Cronenweth, I think is how you say his last name. Anyway, he's a cinematographer from The Social Network, The Fight Club, Gone Girl, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Like he's been a cinematographer on some really, really impressive films. Where was it? Anyway, he does a remarkable job with the cinematography, and both like visually the cinematography, but also the camera movement and like camera angles and the lens choices that he uses, and like lens choices combined with blocking in really interesting ways. I found to be like rather impressive in like a, not like let's do new stuff for the sake of doing new stuff, but that like cinematography is different now, and cinematography is almost more part of editing now, it kind of feels like, and like camera movement is a part of editing. And I thought that those two things in this film, like while I was watching it, I was like, wow, I actually really like this. And it could be that I was so worried about the cinematography that I was paying extra attention to it, but either way, it exceeded any expectations that I could have given it. Not only was it not concerning, it was like not lazy, it was great. It was the opposite of lazy. It was intentional, and it was ambitious and good. And then lastly, the thing that I'll speak about is the editing. Tyler Nelson did the editing, and you'll probably know him most famously from The Batman. And so when I say that cinematography and editing go so essentially together, if you've seen The Batman, you'll know what I mean, where the cinematography combined with the editing creates a certain look and uses the camera angles and the camera movement in the editing process in a way that is enjoyable to watch. And I thought that Tron Ares did something very, very similar. So overall, not only did it live up to my expectations that I had, it exceeded them, and like wasn't just like, oh good, it wasn't a bad movie, but oh wow, this was a good movie. And some of the elements that I loved about Tron Legacy that have meant so much to me, this film also has. And I could find myself in the future continuing to love Tron Ares very easily the way that I love Tron Legacy. So that's all we will say, spoiler-free. The next two segments of Least and Likes, where I talk about my least favorite scene and favorite scene, and then my favorite segment, Fall In, where we talk about movies, the message of the movie, how movies are made meaningful, right? The tagline of the Basement Binge podcast. That's what we'll discuss there, but with spoilers.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Best Seller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
So moving on to least and likes, where typically I talk about my least favorite scene and my favorite scene. It could be that I've only seen it once, and so, you know, the scenes aren't in, you know, they're not ingrained into my memory yet. And so, like, it's been hard for me to both pick out, like, one particular scene that felt really bad or felt particularly good. It was, so I more so just kind of wanted to put it in two categories. Like, here's the things I felt like I didn't like about the film, or the things that I feel like it got wrong, and here's the things that I really, really did like that I haven't already mentioned. So starting with the least, the things that were noticeably not good, I wouldn't quite say to the point of bad, but just not good, is the fight choreography in particular. Not that this film needs it. Like, this doesn't use, if you're trying to reference it to Tron Legacy, this doesn't use fight choreography the same way that Tron Legacy does. There's no Ray Park, there's no Tron, there's no Rinsler, I almost called him the Rizzler. Oh my brain rot. Rinsler, like that isn't there, which is sad. Like that actually is probably, now that I'm sitting down and saying that, that is the part that I'm most disappointed in the film, is that there's no reference to Tron, the character, or Rinsler, the character, that we don't get Ray Park, you know, like it's just, you know, those are just such cool parts about the film. So it doesn't use fight choreography in that way. And what it does with fight choreography is really cool. This is spoiler sections, you know, in that final fight scene that's in the street where Ares is fighting Athena and then those two other goons, and he like uses the light rays from the staff to like step onto them is just like really cool. And I thought it was like really clever and creative, like lore building with the fight choreography, if that makes sense. It also felt like Ares was a good fighter and was like it didn't just feel like he was, you know, a good fighter because the plot told him to be a good fighter. It felt like he was a good fighter because that's like what he is, if that makes sense. Not that him being a fighter is the essential part of his story, but that it's a skill set that he has. Anyway, the choreography, it's not necessarily the choreography. I would say it's more so how it's shot and edited. It feels very blockbustery, shot for coverage type thing. Like there's not that every single fight scene needs a long take, but it's quickly edited, it's quickly cut, and so the choreography is doing cool things, but you're not able to enjoy it as much as maybe you could. The other thing that I liked about it is that some of the dialogue is cringe. I thought the writing was good, okay, at other times, and that some of the dialogue was actually really great. Like I genuinely enjoyed some of the dialogue, but there are other parts of the dialogue that were pretty cringe. And now, because I was lazy and told myself last night when I left the theater that I'd remember the dialogue that I thought was cringe, I don't need to write it down. I'm now sitting here looking at my blank notes and thinking, wow, Harrison, you didn't remember. You should have written that down. So, sorry that I can't think of any of examples. So then, likes. What did I like about the film? What did I get right? As I mentioned heavily, the cinematography, the music, the editing, and then the casting. Jared Leto is surprisingly really good as like, what's weird is that the trailer's kind of marketed as like AI, but the film more kind of just presents him as like another program. He's not AI, he's just a program. And so whatever he is, he's a program that learns and questions his programming. So maybe he's whatever. It doesn't, that's not an important part of the story. But something that has to be so programmatic, like so straightforward, so literal, so I don't know, a program. I thought Jared Leto did a good job, particularly the way that the cinematography focused on his eyes and like the close-up of his eyes and his face in general. I actually like can't believe that I'm saying this. I thought he was pretty good as a character, where it was like someone who doesn't have a lot of emotion because they're discovering emotion. He's good at conveying the blankness that you would have if you didn't have emotion. But he's not too blank to the point where he just feels like a program. He feels like a program who's beginning to learn, if that makes any sense. Evan Peters is also really, really good. And then Greta Lee also was a big standout for me. I apologize. That was really annoying. Greta Lee is a big standout. So lastly, Fall In, the segment where I talk about the themes or message, as my dad used to tell me when I was young, the moral of the story of this film. We try to make movies meaningful. And this is probably the weakest part of this film in particular. I like it. It's doing, as I've said many times throughout this podcast, what other stories of this type have already done before, where it's a program or a robot or something that's not human, learning to be human by learning about feelings and about, you know, the classic line that everything about life that makes it hard is also what makes it good, or the inverse of that. Everything what makes life good also is what makes it hard. Which, that's not a new line. That's not original dialogue. But it's also a good reminder. Like just sometimes things become moot because we've heard them so many times. And I hope that truth, which is an important one, doesn't lose its meaning. It doesn't become trite because it's been used before, because it is true. And it's a good reminder of that. The other thing that I feel like the film did really well, that this is part of the like, but I'm putting it in Fall In because I think this is the biggest takeaway that I had from the film as far as like the moral of the story, is that when Jared Leto first talks about, I can't remember the name of the band, and the sound mixing was not great in this particular scene when they're driving in the Honda Civic down the highway, and Ares, Jared Leto in this case, talks about how he likes the band and like I couldn't hear the band name. I couldn't totally hear his dialogue. Anyway, the dialogue that he says in that, if you were to ask ChatGPT, which I've done before, why a particular artist is meaningful or why people love a particular song by an artist, like you ask it something about society's appreciation of art, it gives you a lot of logical explanation, like tries to give you reasons, which like when Jared Leto began to describe that, that's what he was doing. Like, oh, you know, like because they do this and because they do that. And like a very analytical perspective about why this particular art is worthwhile. But then later, as this program learns its emotions more and more, later he's talking to Jeff Bridges about how he likes it. And he like begins to compare whatever the band is that I forget the name of to Mozart. Like he struggles to describe it. And he says, oh, it's just a feeling. Which I think is like an important thing that not necessarily in our appreciation of art, but yes, in our appreciation of art, one of the things that I'm like literally doing the opposite of is I'm sitting here on a podcast trying to like, you know, sell you or pitch you on or like persuade you on why my opinion of the film is the way that it is. And sometimes it's just, I liked it and that's the way I feel about it. And that's like a totally valid experience. And I think that of course, is meaningful in art and Letterboxd. People made, well, actually, not Letterboxd. Letterboxd is actually really good about it. I say this, did I mention this on this podcast? I've recorded this so many times, I can't remember if I said this, but an interesting part of Harrison Lohr is that the very first post I ever made on Reddit, this was before I knew anything about Letterboxd. Like, I was had just dropped out of film school. I was looking for a way to continue to engage in my interest in film and filmmaking in a way that was like, larger than just watching the same movies over and over again in my parents' basement for whatever Blu-rays we owned. Like I was becoming, I was having like a cinematic awakening and becoming more aware of other films that were made. Like I had very, very little film knowledge, but I loved Tron Legacy, which I still do. And I wanted to engage with people about that. So I went on the movies subreddit and wrote a very lengthy and like, I would say well-written post about why I thought Tron Legacy was a perfect movie. And I was being a little bit on the nose with it because I was talking about how Tron Legacy teaches us about perfection and how it's unattainable and how imperfection is actually perfection and how I thought that was a meaningful thing to take away about our human existence. And so I was using that exaggeratively to say that Tron Legacy was a perfect movie. People did not, it was downvoted into oblivion. It was a very humbling experience and I deleted the post. I deleted my Reddit account. Like that was, I was like, I'm done with Reddit. I'm never going back. And so... what I'm saying is that like sometimes we as people where enjoying something and our enjoyment of that thing that we enjoy becomes a larger part of our identity, there becomes a larger and larger need to validate or to legitimize, if that's a word, our enjoyment of it rationally or logically or analytically so that we can convey that to other people online in almost like a persuasive argument type way. And one of the most impactful things that should be a part of our persuasive argument is I just feel that way about it. But for some reason, in our discussion about art and our appreciation of it, like that's one of like the most invalid comment, like least persuasive comments about our enjoyment of something when it should be the highest. Like I like it and that's how I feel about it is a great thing to say if you like something and that's how you feel about it. Like it. And so there's that, but it obviously that it implies much later that like sometimes feelings are just feelings and like in our, I don't know, like TikTok therapy, TikTok psychology society, we like, you know, try to label everything, try to like analyze and rationalize and explain and whatever. And sometimes feelings are just feelings and feelings are like, they're still real. And they don't make sense and we can't explain them, but they're still feeling. And we shouldn't ignore that just because we can't, you know, explain it. So yeah, I really, really like Tron Ares and I'm excited to be back talking about movies. Another one that has been on my mind, I saw it before I saw Tron Ares, like a week ago, but it's been on my mind since then, is The Smashing Machine. So subscribe to The Basement Binge for an episode on The Smashing Machine and other movies, probably not in theaters here at home. Because I like talking about movies. Anyway, you've been amazing. My name is Harrison, and that's all for now. Ciao, ciao.